The headlines: Russia intensifies its offensive in the Ukrainian city of Mariupol, with a besieged officer warning that his forces are facing their last days of resistance. Israeli forces conduct a fresh raid on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds. The details in a live report from Ramallah straight ahead. And Boris Johnson offers an apology to members of parliament as he becomes the first British Prime Minister to be fined for breaking the law. Welcome, everybody. It's day 56 of the war in Ukraine. Fighting continues over the control of Mariupol, with Russian forces now very close to fully capturing the strategic port city. Ukraine has just announced that it reached a preliminary agreement with Russia to open a humanitarian corridor for women, children, and elderly people out of the besieged city. But thousands of Ukrainian troops and civilians remain holed up at a steel plant in Mariupol. A commander has pleaded for help from inside the factory, saying his forces are facing their last days, if not hours. He said in a Facebook post that his troops are largely outnumbered. A few days ago, Russia gave a deadline to foreign and Ukrainian troops still fighting in Mariupol to lay down their arms in exchange for security guarantees. The Pentagon says the West is intensifying its military support for Ukraine.
I would just say, without getting into what other nations are providing, that they have received additional platforms and parts to be able to increase their fleet size, their aircraft fleet size.
Kirby noted that Ukraine's partners are also offering spare parts to help Kiev repair its damaged arsenal. He refused to give details about Washington's aid package, citing security concerns, but according to other U.S. officials, the package is going to be nearly the same size as the $800 million aid that Washington announced last week. Russian-made helicopters that had once been intended for Afghanistan are reportedly included in that package. Norway also says it will be donating 100 Mistral air defense missiles to Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky has been calling for more military support from Western supporters. Scott Bennett is a former psychological warfare officer at the U.S. Army. We asked him about his assessment of the course of the war in Ukraine. This is what he had to say.
We're at the last stage of this battle in Mariupol, where I think the West is hiding a variety of biological chemical weapons in Mariupol. That's why they are fighting so fanatically. Russia recognizes this. Russia also recognizes that it was a United States missile shot by American forces that took out, most likely, the Russian destroyer and may have led to the poisoning of the Black Sea with nuclear toxic waste as a result of that act of war that the United States engaged in against Russia. So I think Russia is showing a great deal of patience, but at the same time prosecuting this war with a balance of information operations and public affairs. They're not pounding Ukraine to dust. They are choosing their targets very wisely. They are trying to save civilian lives. But of course, the right-wing Nazi Asimov battalions and the Israeli mercenaries that are there are desperately trying to use the indigenous people of Mariupol and Ukraine as human shields. And it's because of that reckless suicide that much of Ukraine is being destroyed.
Finland's parliament will shortly start debating a decision to apply for NATO membership, with the issue gaining more political and public support, mainly because of the war in Ukraine. The government is hoping to reach a parliamentary consensus within weeks. At least half of Finland's 200 lawmakers are now supporting a NATO membership. Also, opinion polls indicate that over 60% of the public are in favor of the move. Neighboring Sweden is also discussing a membership bid. A recent poll shows 57% of Swedes approve of joining the alliance, but Russia is strongly opposed to NATO's eastward expansion. Moscow has previously warned Finland and Sweden against joining the alliance, saying that could result in a nuclear buildup in the Baltic. And security experts warn a move by EU nations, Finland and Sweden, to join NATO could potentially trigger a new world war. Governments in Helsinki and Stockholm say Their decisions as to whether to join the alliance will be made within weeks. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
There are many security experts who claim the expansion of NATO in recent years close to Russia's borders and provocative military exercises are factors that brought about the conflict in Ukraine. Now EU members Finland and Sweden are poised to announce they want to join NATO. One analyst has been giving us his reaction via broadband.
That's a very serious escalation toward Russia, because this is when the United States will put nuclear bombs in Finland, and that would mean a direct escalation that Russia will not accept.
Finland shares a border with Russia that is more than 1,300 kilometres long. Moscow points out that if this country was to join the 30-nation alliance, NATO's land border with the Russian Federation would more than double in length. A new opinion poll by Le Soir newspaper has found that 90% of citizens surveyed in Belgium said the war worries them, but that they do not support direct military intervention over concerns that it could trigger a new world war. A quarter of those questioned said the West's supply of weapons to fighters in Ukraine is, quote, a bad thing. We have also been asking members of the public about this.
Yeah, I think we should stop doing that, huh? Because, war... fights war and then ends up in more war. So it's more about like discussing, talking.
It's a very good thing to have a dialogue with Russians and hopefully sort this out without war.
Ideally, diplomacy is the way that this comes to an end, but it takes two sides. From what I'm reading, they don't want to negotiate at all yet.
On Tuesday, the European Commission defended the decisions taken by EU governments to send arms to Ukraine.
In this case, more weapons doesn't mean more war. More weapons for Ukraine means more ability for the Ukrainian army to defend its people.
As concerns over possible escalation continue to increase, Finland and Sweden are expected to announce, before the end of this month, if they intend to join NATO. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. I spoke with our correspondent in Ramallah, Munakandil, a short time ago to get the latest about the ongoing Israeli aggression.
Well, for the fourth consecutive day, Israeli forces raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex and try to force Palestinian settlers out of the holy site in order to allow Israeli settlers to raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. We have to remind our viewers that Jewish Israelis are celebrating one of their feasts known as Passover that will continue until the 24th of this month. And part of celebrating this feast would be Israeli settlers raiding and storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex and touring inside it. They consider it as normal visits, but for Muslims, of course, they are desecrating the Muslim holy site. Many of the Palestinian worshippers were locked in the Qibli Mosque, one of the mosques of the Al-Aqsa, and now we are receiving that Israeli police officers have even fired rubber-coated bullets toward the Palestinian protesters, Palestinian worshippers, who were demanding the Israeli settlers to go out and not to desecrate their holy site. Up till the moment, dozens of Israeli settlers raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex under the protection of Israeli forces, of course, who continue to attack the Palestinian Muslims.
Al-Aqsa Mosque was once again the scene of Israeli forces assaulting Palestinian worshippers. This time around, there weren't as many injuries as days ago, but the continuing desecration of Islam's third holiest site in Al-Quds by the Israeli regime raises the specter of yet another war on the Gaza Strip, something that happened during the holy month of Ramadan last year.
Just days ago, Israeli occupation forces attacked Al-Quds' Al-Aqsa Mosque, wounding more than 150 Palestinians while it was filled with Ramadan worshippers on one of the holiest days in the Islamic calendar. Now, in a fresh bout of violence, Israeli forces have again targeted Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Dozens of Israeli military forces have stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. This is while the day before, the settlers entered the compound amid a heavy military deployment of Israeli soldiers to mark the Passover holiday and perform their own prayers. This year, the Jewish religious occasion coincides with the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan at a time when thousands of Muslims, predominantly Palestinians, usually stay at the holy site for worship, a rare convergence that will drive unusually high numbers of Jewish, Muslim, and Christian worshippers to the old city of Al-Quds. Far-right Jewish groups have even called for raids of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during the Jewish Passover holiday and the offering of animal sacrifices in its courtyards, which has not occurred since ancient times. Sacred to Muslims and revered by Jews, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Islam's third holiest site, has long been a flashpoint in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
And it's really pushing the Palestinians out of Jerusalem. It's trying to Judaize the city of Jerusalem. And we saw them attacking completely innocent people, you know, old people, women, children. So it's not really about security for Jewish worshippers.
Palestinians have plenty of reasons to be angry, including Israel's restrictions for them to pray at Al-Aqsa and the regime's occupation and crimes, as well as its attempts to Judaize. Al-Quds people in the occupied territories are also angry over inaction of the Palestinian leadership, namely the PA, and the normalization of ties between some Arab states and Israel.
Palestinians in the occupied territories have reacted to the raids by the Israeli security forces by going out to the streets in support of the worshippers. Israel, meanwhile, is trying to paint a different narrative. The Western-backed media is hard at work painting the Palestinians as the aggressors, even calling the worshippers rioters and terrorists. Israel says its so-called security operation is an effort to protect freedom of worship from violent rioters desecrating the site and endangering the public, but it has a tough task since scores of videos show the opposite to be the case. Palestinians are angry on a wide variety of fronts. They are suffering immensely due to the Israeli occupation. Additionally, they are amazed at the international community's indifference to Palestinian suffering amid the Ukraine crisis. Furthermore, the paralysis of the Palestinian leadership has added salt to their wounds, who seems unable to do anything. The resistance group Hamas, however, has described the crisis as the continuing terrorism of the occupation and its crimes, attempts to Judaize Al-Quds and to perform sacrifices in the Al-Aqsa Mosque to build its so-called temple during what they call Passover. The Gaza Strip, meanwhile, is at risk of another Israeli onslaught. Israeli tanks and armored vehicles have made an incursion into northern Gaza Strip, raising the possibility of another war.
Governments around the world need to stop supporting the Israeli aggressions against the Palestinians. And I can say myself, as a rabbi and as a Jewish person, the Jewish communities around the world have to stop supporting the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians.
A similar Israeli assault on Al-Aqsa during Ramadan last year sparked a military confrontation between resistance factions in Gaza, led by Hamas and Israel. Hamas has said this year Israel's assault on the Al-Aqsa and its worshippers is a declaration of war. And sure enough, early on Tuesday, the Gaza Strip came under Israeli assault, reportedly after rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. This is a sure sign that another war may be in the making.
Elsewhere, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has apologized to Parliament as he has become the first British leader to be fined for breaking the law in the so-called Partygate scandal.
And I offer the British people a full apology. And I take this opportunity on the first available sitting day to repeat my wholehearted apology to the House. As soon as I received the notice, I acknowledged the hurt and the anger. And I said that people had a right to expect better of their Prime Minister. And I repeat that, Mr. Speaker, again in the House now.
Despite his apology, however, Johnson claimed he didn't know at the time that the parties were breaching the law. The penalty was announced last week by the police, which are investigating a dozen gatherings held at Johnson's office and residence during the 2020 and 2021 coronavirus lockdown periods. Johnson would first deny any such events, but later admitted to the parties. The opposition parties say Johnson repeatedly lied to the public. In the Parliament session, Labour Party leader Keir Starmer labelled Johnson a man without shame. The British Prime Minister has been hit by a series of controversies. He's also made missteps in the past 6 months. A pivotal moment in the race for the Élysée Palace, incoming President Emmanuel Macron and his far-right contender Marine Le Pen will face off in a televised debate later today. The crucial debate will be the only direct clash between the two candidates ahead of Sunday's second round vote. Some polls are projecting that Macron has a 10-point lead over Le Pen in the runoff. Still undecided voters and abstentions could swing the figures. Macron won more votes than Le Pen in the first round 10 days ago, but failed to get the 50% needed for his re-election. The two contenders are getting prepared for a rematch of the 2017 race, but this year the gap is much smaller. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
So what benefit do the satanic elements in the West get by trying to desecrate the sanctity of the Holy Quran on the pretext of freedom of expression and action? Nothing, except exposing their own devilish nature, which is unfortunately aided and abetted by certain European and other countries, despite their dubious claim to respect human rights. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan, international staff writer. This article is published under the heading, Devilish Disrespect Does Not Diminish Dynamism of Holy Quran. Stay tuned for more.
Thank you.
Those who submit themselves to the will of one and only creator of the entire universe on the basis of the fundamental principle of monotheism in its purest form and acknowledge Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as the Almighty's last messenger in the unbroken chain of God's representatives in every part of planet Earth, beginning with the father of the human race, Adam, are called Muslims. Consequently, Muslims who respect all the prophets that God had sent for guidance of various nations and revere the heavenly scriptures given to some of them, such as the Torah to Moses and the Evangel to Jesus, hold the Holy Quran as the final divine revelation for all humanity, since Islam is a universal creed. Thus, Muslims never disrespect the holy books of other religions, leave alone torching them, even when it is known that the various versions of these texts in circulation amongst their followers have not been preserved in the original form and were subjected to interpolation. Interestingly, the Holy Quran is hailed as the eternal miracle granted by the Lord Most High as proof of the universal mission of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in view of the fact that its challenge to skeptics to try to produce even a few lines matching its flawless eloquence and timeless wisdom remains unanswered to this day, as admitted by scholars in every age and place, including the Christian Arab literati. So what benefit do the satanic elements in the West get by trying to desecrate the sanctity of the Holy Quran on the pretext of freedom of expression and action? Nothing, except exposing their own devilish nature, which is unfortunately aided and abetted by certain European and other countries, despite their dubious claim to respect human rights. The Islamic Republic of Iran thus summoned the Swedish ambassador in Tehran to the foreign ministry on Sunday, April 18th, and lodged a strong protest for the latest act of sacrilege in Sweden towards the scripture revered by almost 2 billion Muslims all over the world, as well as hundreds of millions of other human beings. The statement said, "Iran strongly condemns the burning of a copy of the Holy Quran in the Swedish city of Linköping by a Danish racist extremist, which was done under the protection of the Swedish police on the pretext of freedom of speech, calling on Stockholm to take immediate, severe, and explicit action against the perpetrator, as well as practical measures to prevent such incidents in future," Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson Said Khatibzadeh said. "Blasphemy is an evident example of hatred in contrast with freedom of speech and should be condemned by all those who believe in coexistence and dialogue between faiths." The recent sacrilegious offense by leader of the Danish hardline party, Rasmus Paludan, that led to riots in several parts of Sweden and injury to innocent men, women and children, was not first instance of devilish disrespect towards the Holy Quran, and neither would be the last in view of the satanic intentions of the enemies of humanity. These frustrated forces of Lucifer, however, should know that they cannot avert the inevitable, and as many, including the Irish philosopher and playwright George Bernard Shaw, had predicted, Islam will be the future religion of Europe.
This one lay.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hanan was on her way home when she was wounded by Israeli fire during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp just a few days ago. Since weeks ago, Israeli forces have been attacking the Palestinian refugee camp in Jenin, as well as other cities in the West Bank. The situation has recently been tense in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, with Israeli forces and settlers storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque. At least 170 Palestinians have been injured in the attacks, and that happened on Friday alone. Why is this happening, and what's in the offing? Further escalation or de-escalation? Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Let's see who's joining us in this episode of The Spotlight. Author, researcher, and analyst Daniel Kovalik out of Pittsburgh. Also with us will be writer and activist Laif Marouf, who's joining us from Montreal. Now, let me turn to Pittsburgh first. Daniel, let's begin with the reason or the reasons behind this recent escalation and violence in Palestinian territories. You know, there are some who believe that the Zionists are trying to sort of provoke the Palestinians. Do you agree with them, and why should they do that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. First of all, we have to, you know, keep in mind this is happening during the holy week of Ramadan.
Months of Ramadan, yeah.
In addition, it happened, you know, began during, you know, the holy day of Passover for Jews. So, you know, it was a significant time that this all began. And clearly it was done to provoke a response by the Palestinians. I agree. I think especially with the war in Ukraine and attention to fix there, I think the Israelis think that this is a good time to provoke the Palestinians, and then they would feel justified in launching a bigger attack in the West Bank and apparently Gaza too, because Israel has also been bombing Gaza in the last day or so. So yeah, it's very clear that that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Now over to Montreal. Laif, there are some people who argue that the Zionist aggression against the Palestinians is pre-planned. So what goal are they trying to achieve, and would they succeed to do that?
Let's be very frank here. The Zionists have lost their mind. They're lunatics right now. Because if you do any strategic analysis of the battlefield right now in Western Asia, you would understand that is not the time for Israel to be flexing its muscles as the United States is withdrawing from the region, as the other vessels of the United States are trying to wind down their confrontations. So to see the Zionists do what they did just now is to understand that they can't help themselves. They can't stop themselves from acting in such lunatic manner. Everybody knows attempting to slaughter some animals on the inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque and performing some cultist religious sacrifice there will lead to confrontation, and the Palestinians will fight it back. That's what happened last year. So why do it this year if you're not a crazy lunatic who lost your mind? And that's what the situation is for the Zionist colony. They're like a chicken without a head right now, taking, flopping left and right, and the axis of resistance and the Palestinians should be ready for the consequences of the lunatic behavior of the Zionists.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daniel, in response to the latest atrocities by the Tel Aviv regime, Hamas is saying that the regime will not be able to undermine the Palestinians' struggle for their legitimate rights. Could this violence weaken Palestinian resolve, or will it just backfire?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know for sure. Certainly, look, the Palestinians are a brave people. They have tremendous resolve. The Israelis will not break their resolve, but they could provoke a response that again, the Israelis will use as a pretext for maybe an invasion into the territories. And could the Palestinians, you know, withstand that and beat that back? I'm not sure, you know. And I am concerned that with the world's attention on Ukraine right now, that Israel probably could get away with more than they could otherwise. So we'll have to see. I mean, Israel certainly from a military point of view has the upper hand vis-a-vis the Palestinians, who've been, you know, sadly abandoned by the world for the most part, certainly by the Gulf states in the Middle East, certainly by Europe. And, you know, so we'll see. They obviously have some allies in the region like Iran and Hezbollah who would, you know, possibly come to their defense. So we'll have to see. Mm-hmm. Now, Laith, Daniel mentioned the war in Ukraine. And now we have this double standard, if you agree, that's practiced by Western media. They're doing, you know, this wall-to-wall coverage of the war in Ukraine since day one. But they don't talk much about the Palestinians and the plight and the situation they're suffering from.
Look, for us living in the South and East, peoples that are requesting decolonization, we shouldn't care really what the Western media says. And we already know that our lives are irrelevant to the core elite in the empire. So putting that on the side, I just want to say that usually I never disagree with our colleague Daniel here. I find myself disagreeing here in this point because the Zionists right now are at their weakest point since the creation of the colony. And in fact, today, just a few hours ago, they were attacking Gaza, and for the first time ever, the Palestinian resistance in Gaza used anti-air defenses and chased out the Zionist Air Force. So what we see is the last time the Zionists attacked Gaza, they couldn't last 11 days. They couldn't last 11 days.
Right.
And in a conflict that's going to roll out right now, you know, this could bring the end of the Zionist colony.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, what do you think? Why shouldn't Western media care about Palestinians and things, you know, happening to them, but giving preferential treatment to Ukraine and elsewhere? Well, obviously, there's a couple reasons for that. One, overt racism. Let's face it, a lot of people have talked about that, but in the West, they care more about Ukrainians who have blonde hair and blue eyes than they do about other people suffering war and atrocities in the war, like the Palestinians, like the people in Yemen, for example. But also, of course, it's common for everyone in the world, but certainly we know the West, to focus on the crimes of others rather than their own crimes, right? It's easier to point a finger at Russia and Vladimir Putin than to look at ourselves, at our own allies like Israel, and look at the, you know, crimes that they're committing. And so for both of those reasons, the West has turned away from the Palestinians in a big way. And by the way, I'll just, you know, in response to my colleague, I would just want to say I truly hope that he's right, that the Palestinians, you know, have the power to defend themselves and to defend their territory and, you know, to end this apartheid system in Israel. Mm-hmm. Now, Laith, we talk about the Western media coverage, actual lack of coverage or blackout when it comes to Palestinians, Yemenis, and other people. So what about the international community? Are they not informed about what the Palestinians are going through, and or have they opted to ignore all of that?
I think obviously the word international community is a euphemism of white-centered societies. And you know, there is no such thing as an international community. There is colonial powers and countries that are attempting to decolonize and reach sovereignty and liberation. And excuse me, this means that honestly, after what we just saw in Ukraine, and we keep on talking about Ukraine, there is no point of crying on the shoulder of your colonizer. You have to achieve decolonization through your brute force and then enforce your view of the world and on your enemy. And until then, they, as long as there is not yet a total defeat of the colonial powers in the Arabic world, they will continue to look down and demonize and dehumanize and defame Arabs and Muslims in general until we have a power center that can stand up to them and make sure that our peoples are not denigrated.
Now, Daniel, let's take a look at how far the U.S.'s schemes and its staunch support for the Tel Aviv regime has been responsible for this situation that we're witnessing in the occupied lands these days.
Yeah, well, the U.S., of course, bears a huge responsibility for what's happening. Israel is more or less, you know, an outpost of the U.S. In the region. The U.S. blindly supports Israel to the tune of over $3 billion a year, which props up the Israeli military. I don't see a lot of signs that that's going to end anytime soon. There's very few people in Congress who ever criticize Israel. When they do, of course, they're attacked as anti-Semitic, even if they happen to be Palestinian themselves, right? But yeah, the U.S. bears a huge responsibility. And that's why, you know, it is important, the solidarity movement in countries like the United States, the BDS movement. I think they can play an important role in helping, at least aiding the struggle of the Palestinian people. And I see that as an emerging and growing movement in the United States. And I hope that that continues to grow.
Now, Laith, do you find Washington complicit in the crimes that the Israelis are committing against Palestinians?
For sure. I mean, 100%. The Zionist colony cannot exist without direct military intervention of the United States and direct siphoning of resources to the Zionist colony. Even its economy is a fabricated economy. People keep on, you know, the Zionists keep on bragging about the prowess of the technology sector. That sector wouldn't exist if there is no direct, unnatural investment from the West into the Zionist colony. So, yes, this is just a beachhead, a military base, you know, at the heart of the Arabic world, at the heart of the Muslim world, that chops off geographically the continuity of our peoples, and it continues to act as a poisonous pouch, spitting out poison every time the region starts destabilizing and our peoples begin to build our capabilities. You know, this colony causes strife in the region.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel, what is it that keeps whoever is at the White House, no matter who takes the helm of the White House, to continue to do the same thing, to the way that the U.S. has been acting regarding Palestinians? We had President Trump going there, and, you know, he would publicly announce what he, you know, he was wearing his heart on his sleeves, and he would just let you know what he feels about Palestinians and Israelis. He gave Israelis open support. They, you know, there was this hill they named after him, the occupied ones in Golden Heights, the Trump Hill and that. And then he offered the so-called deal of the century, which Palestinians find a stab in the back. And he sounded the way you know. But President Trump doesn't sound like him, but not much has changed under this new administration. And God knows who the next person will be. But why doesn't things change for Palestinians?
Well, again, there's several reasons for that. I think the power of the Israeli lobbying in the United States is incredible with AIPAC. There's a lot of money that's given to both parties by AIPAC to keep supporting Israel. You know, you see Israel sponsors all these trips for freshman Congress people to go over to Israel. And so you have that sort of lobbying and pressure and money. I think also there's just this almost instinctive feeling that somehow Israel is the essential ally for the United States in the world, that it will never abandon, even though I think there's a lot of arguments to be made that Israel has, you know, if it was ever a real help to the U.S., it's become an incredible liability. And, you know, to me, it's inexplicable is in terms of what it's actually accomplishing for the U.S. Mm-hmm. In the region. I think all it does is create more instability, more hatred towards the United States. And, of course, it costs the U.S. a lot of money. So there's a good case to be made that it makes no sense to keep propping up Israel. But again, it's almost a dogma that is inviolable in the United States, that somehow we have to support Israel. And again, those who speak out against that notion are attacked.
Right. Now, Laith, let's take a look at the Arab states, a number of Arab states, so-called normalization deals they signed with Tel Aviv. How far have those deals emboldened the regime to push ahead with atrocities against Palestinians?
It added to their delusion, because the reality is that these vassal Arab monarchies that never experienced the revolutions of decolonization after the end of World War II, which were protected by the French, the English, and the Americans after, always been on the side of the Zionists. They've never actually helped the Palestinian people. So in reality, what they just did with this is they exposed their vassals and are weakening the vassal states in the Gulf, this action of normalization in public. I want to add also that, you know, the existence of the Zionist colony is maybe at the heart of the imperialist project. Without the existence of the Zionist colony, the United States will not be able to project its power to all of Asia, North Africa, and East Africa, the Horn, which means it cannot control the world. You know, no matter what you try, it's not really about the power of the Zionist lobby. It's an issue of survival of the United States, the existence of the Zionist colony. And they will die. You know, it will be the last thing they will let go of as an imperial power. And therefore, what the Palestinians are doing as work of liberation of Palestine is liberation work for all of the world. The United States will cease to be able to project its power into right. Asia and Africa without the existence of this colony.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daniel, given the circumstances in the occupied territories, you know, this land grab policy is being perpetuated. More Palestinian land is being, you know, confiscated. Settlements are being built on top of them. Then we also have this violence against them. And also then we have the silence and inaction of international organizations and bodies. So what is the right way for the Palestinians under such conditions?
The right way to defend themselves? I mean, I agree with my colleague that in the end, they're going to have to defend their rights by force. I mean, no one is standing up for them. No one is defending their right of return. No one is defending their right to exist. No one is defending, you know, the international consensus that these settlements in the West Bank are illegal. Nothing is done to change that situation. The settlements continue, in fact, increase. And so really, in the end, it is up to the Palestinian people to fight and defend their rights. I don't see any other way. You know, there was a time when some of us thought maybe nonviolence was the way, but I don't think that only works when you have an enemy that is moral, right? And that you can influence their moral compunctions, right? And I don't see that here. I don't see Israel having that. I don't see the U.S. having that. And lacking that, I think all they can do is have a defense of armed force.
Okay. And Jalaith, what's the way for them forward? I mean, is it, let's say, mediation by third parties, deal of the century? Is it resistance? What's the best way forward?
I mean, obviously, that has been tried, tested, and so anybody that currently will speak about negotiated end of hostilities is living in the past century. In this 21st century right now, the only way forward for the Palestinians is armed struggle, and at the same time to offer the Zionists the same offer that Salah ad-Din gave to the Crusaders, which is you have the right to stay in your home, shut in, and become an equal to the indigenous population of Palestine. You have the right to loot what you want and get on a boat and leave and nobody will get in your way, or you have the right to die by the sword fighting as a colonizer. And this is the offer that should be given openly now by the Palestinian resistance to the Zionists.
Okay. On that note, we come to the end of this edition of This Vital. Let me thank our guests. So we had author, researcher, analyst Daniel Kovalik in Pittsburgh, and writer and activist Jalaith Maarouf in Montreal.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إذا أضرت النوافل بالفرائض فارفضوها.
Imam Ali said, when optional issues, the nawafil, stand in the way of the wajib, the fara'id, then abandon the nawafil.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, when we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course we find that this divinely appointed Imam is a spring of knowledge and wisdom. It seems that this divine knowledge and this divine wisdom flows from the depths of the soul of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And it is really not that strange for this to occur for individuals such as Imam Ali alayhi salam. They are connected to the divine. They are connected with the Almighty Allah. One of the things in this holy month of Ramadan that we endeavor and undertake is to establish and strengthen and increase our connection with the Almighty Allah. Fasting in these days of the holy month of Ramadan really teaches us so many things. One of those things, dear friends, is generosity. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, generosity has its roots in man's dignity. Hence, to hold others under obligation against one's generosity is contrary to a human being's greatness. Generosity is one of the things which we practice and we learn in the holy month of Ramadan. And generosity comes from one's dignity, one's honor, one's nobility. It is a human being's honor and nobility and dignity, the respect and love for others that brings about generosity. You give something for the sake of Allah. You are generous for the sake of Allah. But then Imam Ali alayhi salam says, there is something which is contrary to a human being's greatness. What is that? That is when one holds others under obligation for their generosity. Meaning, I gave something for the sake of Allah. I gave some charity, or I gave away a gift to a fellow human being for the sake of Allah, in the name of Allah. And then later on, I say, do you remember I gave you such and such thing? Do you remember I gave you charity? Do you remember I did this and this for you? Allahu Akbar. Imam Ali says, this is contrary to human beings' greatness. If you are generous, and if you give in the way of Allah, as the tradition says, give in a manner where your one hand does not know that the other hand has given away charity. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.